Hey there, Michael.
Hello, Patrick.
How are you today, sir?
I'm very jolly.
That's great.
We've had some excellent news for the network over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, do tell.
So, over the past couple of weeks, we've launched a new show with Brett Kelly called Cooking with Brett and Mike. It's not how it sounds at all.
Despite the podcast names, which all have to do with cooking.
Exactly. It's a different food stuff each episode. Me and Brett do plan to talk about food and cooking one day, but we have a lot of things we need to cover first. And as soon as we're finished with all of those things, which is practically everything, we will get to the recipes.
To the recipes and the food and the cooking, yes.
Exactly.
And the garlic aioli sounded awfully nice. I was wondering exactly how you might play that off of in some other dishes, but I guess we'll have to wait to find that out, won't we?
Exactly. We're taking stock of the recipes, and one day we'll maybe in season two we'll actually do the recipes. Who knows?
Ooh, wait. Here's an idea.
Okay.
I know we're boring the listeners to death. I don't care.
Never.
The idea is you could build a full kind of menu based on the podcast names. So you never have to explain it. You just have to say, hey, just look at all the podcasts we've done just thus far. Boom, there you go. There's your meal.
I like that.
Yeah,
I will let Brett know.
See, yeah.
So if you like, we're basically at the moment we're talking a lot about technology and stuff. And if you like to hear an American guy try and do a British accent and a British guy try and do an American accent, then you will enjoy Cooking with Brett and Mike. Also, as well, Apple have been kind enough to feature both that show and the network on the UK store on the podcast page.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, and there's a post on the 70 Decibels blog, which I'm sure Patrick will put in the show notes for this episode.
I will.
So you'll be able to see some screenshots in case you're coming to this after the point where it's no longer on the store anymore. But hopefully it'll be there forever, and then it'll all be well. But anyway, I've taken up far too much time, and we haven't even introduced our guest yet.
I know. We got Julio here. Julio
so quietly. Thank you, Julio, and
no
I'm sorry
problem.
To have made you listen to all of that.
Yeah. Well, I kind of gave him the sad story of my life before he even got on, so I basically lulled him into quiet submission.
At this point, I'm doing a lot of eye rolling, so.
So, Julio, how are you today?
I can't complain. All things considered, not bad.
Good.
To use a British term, brilliant. I'm brilliant.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I didn't know that American people didn't say that, but now I do.
Well, so they don't say that the way you say that.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, in the context at which you say that. You use brilliant in the same way that we might use awesome. Right?
Yeah, in fact, I had a Twitter exchange with a friend. She was saying, you know, awesome is not a word you want to use with your CEO, and so I suggested she say brilliant with a British accent.
Yeah.
That'll fool
exactly.
It adds a level of professionalism to everything.
Yes, yeah. And sophistication.
Yes.
I mean, everything sounds better when it's said with a British accent.
Of course.
So, Julio, we are lucky enough to have you as a guest at the on the first kind of inaugural segment, at least in its current, it's renamed version, because we had a poll, basically what to call our Enough For skit, because we didn't think that quite, you know, there's a certain ring to it. Like, all of these great British shows have, like, you know, star in a reasonably priced car and things like that, and we didn't have, like, anything that's kind of catchy. And so we had a poll, and two or three people went to the poll and voted, and they came up with, are you ready? This is the winner. God, where's the drum roll? Are you
Mike,
there we go. All right. the winner of the poll is, how bare is your ear?
There we go. And that at Grapefruit Moon on Twitter, who submitted that to us.
Yay.
Thanks 87% of the vote.
Thanks
so
a lot.
Congratulations, all and right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great name. So, Julio, you are the first contestant on How bare is your air?
The problem now is Pat will do this on every episode.
Yes,
he will
yes,
with a this, show, with, like a game show voice. Host.
Yeah, like a game
yeah,
show.
Yeah, fortunately,
host.
Most people won't see the dopey grin that he has on his face when he does.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he also wearing a sparkly gold jacket?
We should have some like game show music, you know.
I have the perfect music, which is playing right now in the background.
Ah, perfect. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so here we go. Basically, the conceit of the show, Julio, is this: you are the lucky recipient of a base model 64 GB MacBook Air 11-inch. That's all the space you have. That's what I run with every day. Got it sitting right here in front of me. Works perfectly fine for me. How, in fact, would you make that work for you, given the constraints?
You know, that's an interesting question that I've actually been wrestling with for years now.
Hmm.
And that's because, not necessarily because of any space constraints on any particular computer I'm working on, but because of my... I've wanted to accomplish two goals. Number one, be able to sit down at any computer and just get to work.
Mm.
And number two, render any of these computers completely immune to disaster. Like if God smites my computer.
I've seen a few smited computers this week, so it's possible. Yeah.
So I just want to completely eliminate the worry of like a hard drive going south and losing data.
Mm.
And so... For a couple of years now, I've engineered my computing environment in such a way that it's almost entirely cloud-based.
Okay.
And it's been sort of a gradual process, but right now I'm at the point where I'm so cloud-based at this point that your challenge is no challenge whatsoever for me.
Ooh.
I don't need hardly any hard drive space at all.
Ooh.
I laugh. Huh. At your chops.
these are quite strong words coming here. I wonder if you've got the chops to back them up.
Yeah. I want to see how you're going to, you know, what kind of knives are you bringing to this gunfight?
Yeah, and so so in preparation for the show, I actually nuked the hard drive on this MacBook Air entirely.
Wow.
That is preparation.
That's some serious. That's more preparation than I do for this show.
Actually, let me back up. My wife and my son have accounts on here, so I left those alone. But I nuked my account and then created an entirely virtual account for myself, and then started loading things back in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting process because it sort of illustrated for me, you know, sort of reminded me of what my approach is, and. That approach to a very, very large extent is Google-based.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've gotten so comfortable with all of Google's various web apps that I've grown to dislike the Apple equivalents.
Wow.
Rather intensely.
Wow. Steve's so, looking down on you, and he's not too happy, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I have a somewhat schizophrenic existence because I'm in love with Apple hardware, but I've grown... to increasingly dislike the software that Apple provides on its machines.
Hmm.
So if I can run that through with you, Julio, quickly. So I assume then you're using Google Calendar instead of iCal.
Correct.
The Google Docs suite instead of iWork.
Correct.
Google Address Book that's in all their applications instead of Address Book.
Correct.
And Gmail instead of Mail.
Correct. But there's a Mac-like twist to all of this. I don't just like fire up my browser and look for the bookmark corresponding to each of these. I want this Google experience to be very Mac-like, and so I do that in a couple of ways. I download a piece of software called Mailplane. Have you heard of Mailplane?
Yep, familiar with Mailplane.
Mailplane. I juggle multiple Google accounts. Like I have a generic Google account that I use for work-related purposes because Google very often releases new features for generic accounts before it does so for Google Apps accounts.
Yeah.
So I juggle two accounts. I always have two accounts going, my main one, my Google Apps domain name customized account, and a generic. And I also do, I'm also the sort of the informal email administrator for my family members. My mother and father have Google Apps accounts with their own domain names. My son has one of those. My wife has one of those. And so if those accounts require any maintenance, I just,
you can jump in and
I can just on Mailplane. It's trivial to jump from one Google account to the other. So Mailplane is a must. It's the first thing, the very, very first thing I install. Okay. But Mailplane is not a resource hog. It's just a wrapper.
It's essentially almost like a dedicated browser for Gmail.
Exactly.
Right.
It's quite expensive, isn't it? Like, let me rephrase that. For the Mac App Store, it's £17.50.
Yeah.
In the Mac App Store.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that would be.
I think that's somewhere around $35, I'm inclined to say.
Oh, see, now I'm going to have to check.
Don't worry. You keep talking.
All right, please.
Yeah. In fact, I swear by Mailplane so much that when I reviewed it a long time ago, the author gave me a license, which I had sort of been using ever since. But I swear by this app so much. And when the Mac App Store version came out, mm-hmm, I bought it. I just paid. It's worth it. It's the developer, you know, is worthy of such support. So now I own the Mac App Store version, and I totally swear by this app.
Mm. It's $25.
Worth it. Absolutely. Yeah. If you're a big Google head and you're a Gmail fanatic, it's on a Mac, it's totally worth it because the alternatives are less desirable. Like just doing it in the browser. The thing with Mailplane, it has all these little hooks into the Mac OS. Like, mm-hmm, it connects you to your address book. You have, you know, drag and drop attachment,
okay,
adding to blank messages. It's very it's a wrapper. It's a browser wrapper essentially, but it has all these little
nice features that make it feel, yes, like a native app, despite the fact that it kind of is and kind of isn't. It kind of skirts this line.
And I'm a dock icon snob. When Mailplane first came out, I loved the concept so much, but loathed the dock icon so much that I just couldn't use it. If it has an ugly icon, I just cannot use it. But its current icon, which is designed by another designer, is the most, the best Mac OS X app dock icon I've ever seen. It's just brilliant.
All right.
And then and to sort of carry this conversation further, the other Google services, Docs, Google Voice, I'm a big Google Voice user, Google Calendar, what I do is I create Fluid apps.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I want all of these suckers in my dock.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to click. And so I go on Google, look for the correct icons in a PNG format.
Right.
Create a Fluid app. I'm off to the races.
So I'm a Fluid user too. I have a Fluid app for my business interests actually. So all of the stuff I use for my business are web apps, whether it be 37 Signals High Rise, mm-hmm, Basecamp, Backpack. I use BlinkSale for my invoicing. But basically I've created a business Fluid app, so I can launch this single serving browser that still allows you to do tabs, but I have one just for my business. So all of the stuff I need to run my business are all in one window in a separate app, separate from Safari, separate from, you know, and operate like a web app with different kind of panes, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, if I can just clarify for anyone that doesn't know, Fluid is a standalone application which allows you to take a web app and make a dock icon out of it, and then it will launch independently as if it was its own application in its own window, which is not a regular browser window.
Yeah,
like think of it on iOS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, think about the way that we just described Mailplane. Think about being able to do that with any web app, and that's, mm-hmm, kind of what you're able to do with Fluid apps is basically make single serving browser applications that you can put in the dock and give custom icons to and whatnot, and they kind of operate like an application, but in fact are simply running in a specialized browser.
And in the past, I've also, like I said, I'm a big user of Google servers. In the past, there are ways to configure the calendar app on the Mac, the mail app for the Mac, you know, with your
yeah,
with your
you Google can make them talk to your Mac applications, yeah.
And I've grown increasingly reluctant to do that, partly because the current Lion calendar app is loathsome in appearance. God. I just can't stand it.
Horrible.
And that mail app I use with the greatest of reluctance, partly because I need to be in there for my work-related email, which is not Google Apps based.
Right.
It's Microsoft Exchange based. So I have to be in there so that, like, if I get a message on my work account that I want to drag over to a home account folder.
Yeah.
I need to be able to do that. But if that were removed from the equation, I would be in Gmail's web interface all the time because I consider that vastly superior to any desktop mail application.
Question for you, yeah. Having said that, you know, they recently made some fairly big interface changes, mm-hmm. and I think are still in the process of rolling those out across their various apps, mm-hmm. And I think even maybe with Google Apps, maybe some have not been rolled out yet, I don't know.
They're lagging a bit, but
they'll come eventually. How are you feeling about the kind of new, refreshed...
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like the aesthetics, agree with me.
Yeah.
They've modernized the appearance. Some people hate it, but I think they've modernized and freshened the appearance. And then and then across all of the Google web properties, they created the Google bar.
Yeah, the little Google bar up top, so you can switch easily between them.
Which is takes up less space than what existed before.
Right.
And I like clicking the Google icon to get the drop down for all your most used apps.
Yeah.
I wish that were customizable, but it's nice.
Yeah. Okay.
So all in my opinion, in my personal opinion, all of this is moving in the right direction.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we've covered your kind of basic productivity. What is there anything that kind of falls outside of that? Things that like. Gosh, this is a really nice to have sort of thing.
And then, I like the web environment a lot. I like to be in the web. There's a new kind of computer called a Chromebook. Have you heard of
Chromebooks? Yeah, the Chromebooks. The
I'm a big Google head, so flipping open a Chromebook and just working within the browser environment agrees with me. I like that.
Okay.
There are web-based social media consoles like Hootsuite, TweetDeck, Web, Seismic mm-hmm. Web, where you do all of your social media on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I like that. But, being a Mac head, there's a short list of native apps that are must-have on my computer. What I do with these apps, I could very well do on the web, but given the choice, I like to do it natively.
Mm.
These apps are very nice, are elegantly designed, and they don't take up a lot of space. So, and the big ones are... NetNewsWire,
mm-hmm.
the old version, not the newer one.
All right.
The old NetNewsWire, I vastly prefer to any of the newer RSS apps like Reader. So I swear by that. Mars Edit for blogging. I've got all my WordPress, all my Tumblr blogs in there.
Now I know you've talked up before. You really like. Microsoft's Live Writer.
Windows Live Writer.
Windows Live Writer, yeah, for blogging when you have mm-hmm. access to it, you think it's probably the best out there. Would you put Mars Edit as kind of like if, you got to use a Mac, that's the one to go with? That's
it's my current favorite. I've used I'm blanking on the name, Mariner or something.
Mac Journal.
I've used Mac Journal. That's nice. I tend to be very, very fickle. I like Firefox was my default browser for a time, and then I mm-hmm. moved to Safari. I'm currently on Chrome. I cycle endlessly. So Mac Journal and Mars Edit are both very good. What I like about Mars Edit, which makes it superior to Windows Live Writer and other, is it has Tumblr support.
Which is
so you have greater flexibility to have more of your blogs within a single interface.
All right.
So the Tumblr support is good. I've recently moved over to Evernote. I was using
congratulations, in my opinion.
I was using Notational Velocity until recently because mm-hmm. it's more minimalist. I like the minimalism mm-hmm. of Notational Velocity, but Evernote sort of leads us into another part of this conversation, which is cross-platform support.
Mm.
I tend to be, perhaps different from many of the Mac users who you talk to because I'm also on Windows machines a lot.
Yeah.
As a tech writer.
As part of your job, I would imagine you're bouncing around more than probably most other people would, even those that, say, use Windows at work and Mac at home. I would imagine that for you... you could bounce back and forth several times a day depending upon what you're doing.
Exactly. And so that Windows is part of what I described earlier, which is I have to be able to sit down at any computer and just pick up where I left off.
Right.
And so I like notational velocity a lot, but I couldn't replicate that experience with enough ease and I could access that information in up to a point on Windows, but it wasn't a frictionless experience.
Right.
And so somewhat reluctantly, because I think Evernote is a somewhat overwrought app in terms of design.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that getting your data back out of it in a way that's sane. I've brought up issues with that in the past, but
yeah. But Evernote is on the nice thing with Evernote is it's on every device you can possibly use.
Yeah.
Android, iOS, yeah. iPad, yeah. iPhone, Windows, yeah. Mac.
I would also argue that beautifully designed on iOS and then beautifully designed as one of the best looking Android apps, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the, like, they really work hard to look the best they can on whatever platform they're on, mm-hmm. right? Which is something I really do appreciate about Evernote.
And Evernote, the other reason I'm sort of gravitating towards Evernote is I want to support them in the sense that they're making an effort to be cross-platform. I think it's a worthy goal for your product to work on a wide variety of devices. Which is not to say, certain software companies are very Mac-based.
Mm-hmm.
The Mac is their audience, and that's all they do, mm-hmm. and that's fine for them. But I respect companies that take a different, broader approach and try to make their product usable, on all platforms.
Yeah, and as we've talked about here before, I understand that is a big part of the reason why they handle data parity the way that they do, mm-hmm. because for them that's a primary goal, and mm-hmm. and I think that is a if that's a worthy primary goal, that there are certain trade-offs that come with that goal, and they've made those trade-offs.
And I use Evernote in a very specialized way. I'm a journalist, and when I'm doing a phone interview with somebody, mm-hmm. I'm typing my notes,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
I need to designate one app as my repository for interview transcripts.
Yeah.
So if I get on the phone with somebody doing an interview, I don't think about it anymore. I just fire Evernote and start typing
wherever you are, and you can just start going.
And then I refer to the notes on another computer at home later. And
So here's a question for mm-hmm. you, unrelated to Evernote, but somewhat. You mentioned a little bit earlier that you have a tendency to bounce around to different browsers. Do you bounce around? Is part of the motivation for bouncing around because of the different machines that you're on, and because it's like, okay, I know that, for instance, the Firefox experience is going to be the same on the Mac as it is on Windows, or at least there's going to be as much kind of feature parity. So if I just stick with that, no matter which one I go to, because I'm using lots of web-based apps and lots of web-based, accessing a lot of web-based stuff, that you want that experience to be consistent in either place? Is that at least part of the motivation?
No. If I use one browser in one place, I'm probably using it everywhere.
Yeah, then that's what I meant.
And
right?
Firefox, for a long time, I used Firefox because of it had the best plugins.
Yeah.
But Chrome has achieved parity with Firefox in that regard.
Yeah.
For a time, I preferred Safari for one very narrow reason. There's an option where you can simplify the contents of a web page.
Yeah. With text. Reader.
But then there's one additional step that I have found nowhere else. You can click a mail button, have the entire contents pasted into an email, and then fire that mail. Off.
Yeah. I would imagine for getting data into Evernote, that's especially useful to you.
Yeah. So I left Safari with the greatest reluctance. One of the reasons I left it was because it was flaking out on me for reasons I could not quite discern. Chrome is my favorite current favorite for another somewhat narrow reason. Since I'm starting up on new computers all the time, like I'll get a new computer and I have to sort of set up my experience very quickly, I like Chrome because once you install Chrome and then log into your Google account, all of your plugins load automatically.
Ah, nice.
You don't have to install them individually.
Nice, nice. Okay, all right. I had no idea about that.
And there are must-haves in there, like X marks for bookmark syncing, LastPass. for yeah. passwords.
Yeah.
Those suckers just install right away.
Ah, I had no idea about that. That's interesting.
Then I activate LastPass on Chrome, and that automatically populates my passwords everywhere else.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
It's very fast, very quick.
So, obviously, I would imagine there's some other things there. Are you using Dropbox at all?
Dropbox, absolutely.
Yep, yeah, yeah, okay, all right. So, I would imagine that, you know, Dropbox is one of those things you'd have to have.
But what within your challenge scenario, like right. this computer that is in front of me sort of fits into that. It's not – has a slightly harder hard drive. But I have so much stuff in Dropbox that it wouldn't all fit on here.
Ah, okay.
So I make very creative use of their selective sync feature.
Ah, yeah, okay.
I only sync stuff that's essential.
That you essentially need, yeah.
Depending on the hard drive space on any given computer, I'll sync more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then the other categories that are relevant here are music. Like, for instance, I wrestled with, you know, how much music can I put on my computer without running out of space.
Right.
That has become a complete non-issue because I've uploaded my entire music collection to Google, to Amazon, and to Apple.
Just in case. One of them sets on fire.
Just, in case both North Carolina, Washington State, and I think California and Nevada, in case all of those fall off on the edges here in the Midwest, you'll still be rocking your tunes.
Exactly. So at this point, I've completely stopped worrying about whether I should install any music on my computer at all.
Yeah.
Because I know it's in the cloud somewhere. I can just get to it whenever I want.
That's, you know, I think that this is a whole nother conversation, but that's the promise that we're getting to, right? And the promise I was actually at a client's today who hadn't heard of iCloud. You know, she's a Mac user and, you know, but she's not someone who pays attention to this stuff, right? And, you know, so when I said, well, we were talking about backup and I said, well, you know, iCloud will help some of these offsite backup concerns, you know, if not many or most of them for your purposes. And she was like, what's iCloud? And I explained iCloud and how iCloud worked and, you know, where it is now, but more so where the promise is, right? And the promise is that everyone's going to support iCloud eventually. You know, that is not only going to be just Apple and their internal apps, but that any third-party developer would be crazy not to support iCloud because users will come to expect that they show up at a Mac or they go to the store, they buy a Mac, they bring Mac home, they power Mac on, and Mac's first question is, enter in your iCloud user ID and password. And they'll enter that in, and boom, all of their stuff is there, all of their settings are there, everything is there already, and they don't have to do anything additional. That's kind of what led to this conversation.
This is what we have on iOS. And,
yeah, you know, yeah.
To see it on the Mac wouldn't be too inconceivable.
No, and that's kind of how I explained it to her was I said, if I were to lose my iPhone right now, if it were to be stolen, I could erase it from, you know, hop onto your browser, erase my phone, go down to the Apple store, buy a new phone, power on new phone, put in my name and password, and now new phone looks exactly, has all the apps, has all the music, has all the data, exactly the same as my old phone. And that's the promise, right? That we want to be able to do that, and that, you know, Apple is promising us, essentially, without saying it quite so fully yet, that one day we'll be able to do that with our Mac. One day, pretty soon, I would guess probably within the next year, enough of those pieces will be rolled out into place that we'll be able to do that, right? So anything else before we kind of wrap this up?
The other category is photos. I no longer hook up my camera to my computers very much anymore because I'm usually taking photos of my iPhone and photos taken with my iPhone get synced via iCloud automatically.
Yeah, exactly. They show up in the photo stream. I mean,
that's probably what takes up the most space on a computer at this point. The photos that are kind of loading in,
yeah,
via the photo sync on iCloud. But those, as I understand it, those rotate. You know, they rotate in and out.
Right. So it eventually it will only do a certain portion of them unless you go in and specifically want to search for something else. Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks a lot, Julio. I appreciate you coming on, and you know, I think out of everyone that we've had kind of do this shtick, because you're, God, who there was someone who was very Terry Lucy-esque and like needed like five things and was fine. I can't remember who that was, but I'd have to say that you're pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're
'cause I can work on a Mac or a Chromebook.
Right.
And feel no pain in either environment.
Right.
In fact, I have a Chrome OS simulator I'm going to install on my computer and work in the Chrome OS on my Mac.
So that you can get that experience.
I'm a Mac user. I love the Mac. But the Chrome OS concept resonates with me because it distills everything down to the very essence.
I mean, Google should just give you a Chromebook. I mean, they didn't just say, here, have one. Because, I mean, they've got at least... I'm thinking 50,000 of them just laying around. I'm surprised they didn't say, here, Julio, just have a Chromebook.
Well, I'm itching to buy one because the prices are coming down.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to... My understanding is they're holding on to quite a few of them.
I have a little...
They're not selling the way that they were hoping.
Exactly. So at some point, when they hit the magic $100 mark, I'm probably going to buy one.
Of course. Yeah. Heck, at that price, I might buy one.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't. All right, so so thanks a lot, Julio. I appreciate you coming on as always, and we always have a good time when we have you around, and we get good quality feedback from our listeners. So thank you very much.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, and with that, Michael, we are officially wrapping up the very first inaugural renamed "How Bear Is Your Heir." Thanks everyone for joining us today, and. We'll talk later.
We will. Cheers.
Cheers.